Thanks for coming back to another episode of Pitch It, a fintech conversation amongst founders, investors, and friends. I'm your host, Todd Anderson, Chief Content Officer at Fintech Nexus. And what we do is we take a peek behind the curtain. What motivates someone to start a company? How do investors make the right bet? What do accelerators do during and help enabling the process of growing your company? How do banks think of founders? Not to mention, we try to have some fun, and what you'll see is we'll also do some special episodes. We have some new features coming, so stick with us, and you'll get all you'll need to know about the fintech startup landscape. Pitch It is really a part of a larger podcast network here at Fintech Nexus. You can go to my colleague Peter, our co-founder and chairman, for Fintech One-on-One. You can subscribe to his feed, or we have our newest podcast by one of our writers, Isabel Castro, the Fintech Coffee Break. For everything produced by Fintech Nexus, you can check out Fintech Nexus Podcast, which is really our content fire hose. All shows, webinar replays, even in-person event content, not to mention our weekly news show. As always, we hope that you rate the show and write a review. I try to really take listener feedback seriously, and as it helps make the show better. You can also follow the podcast and all of our podcasts on the feed of your choice, whether it be Apple, Spotify, wherever you like to listen, or come directly to news.fintechnexus.com. Now, let's get on with the show. On today's episode, I'm joined by Ron Ross, co-founder, president, and COO of Everi. Ron and I talk about his journey to starting a company for the first time. His previous role was, I think, four times over was CFO. We also get into his CFO experience when it came to raising capital for Everi, the problems with and the misaligned incentives around payroll, the path to the payday becoming every day, the Boston Red Sox, and much, much more. A couple of short PSAs before we get started. Applications for Pitch It have now closed. Keep a lookout for the semifinals, April 26th and 27th. The finals will take place at Fintech Nexus USA on May 11th at 10:30. The Innovation Zone will be the stage, and that stage is located on the expo floor. If you want to sponsor an episode, come on as a guest, or sponsor one of the many digital or in-person offerings we have, please reach out anytime, todd@fintechnexus.com. And next week is Price Break Week. What that means, prices will go up at the end of next week. So make sure if you don't have your ticket, you buy your ticket today. This will be the last time prices are going to be this cheap. So make sure you go to fintechnexus.com and purchase your ticket. Now, without further ado, Ron Ross, co-founder, president, and COO of Everi. I hope you enjoy the show. Hey, Ron, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thanks, Todd. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So I'd like to kick off the episode. If you could just tell the audience a little bit about your professional journey, what kind of brought you to where you are today?
Sure. I'm Ron Ross. I'm one of the co-founders of Everi, which we'll be talking about today. Prior to starting Everi, I was a CFO, CFO four times over in different startup growth companies. So that's where I spent most of my career, in finance and accounting.
So what brought you to the point of, starting a company? You've mentioned, being a CFO four times over. Was it something that you eventually always wanted to do, or kind of through your travels found, this consistent problem and said, hey, if no one's going to solve it, maybe I'll solve it with, me and my co-founders?
Great question. It's a bit of both. I think going all the way back to business school, I took some classes in entrepreneurship, and I always loved the idea of starting my own business and, thinking about some of the entrepreneurs I heard from, I was always fascinated about how they went about their you know, starting their entrepreneur journey. And I always thought, however, when I would look at these entrepreneurs, they were these, you know, bigger than life personalities, very extroverted, and that's not me. And so I always viewed myself as wanting to be involved in that, but play more of a, I guess, a supporting role, supporting cast. And so I did just that. I was a VP of finance and a CFO and chief operating officer. So working alongside entrepreneurs and CEOs to help grow those businesses. And then, you know, in the last business that I was in, I was the CFO there. I realized this problem in payroll and just became very passionate about solving that. And that's more of the origin story of Every. And I can tell that.
Tell us a little bit more about that. Kind of, you know, how'd you come together with your co-founders, and ultimately why start, you know, Every, and you know, what's kind of some of the thinking behind, you know, what you guys are building?
Yeah, certainly. So this is in the summer of 2017. And as I mentioned, again, I was a CFO of a startup company, very familiar with payroll, had done payroll again, and, you know, multiple companies, and very familiar with payroll as a process and how it worked. However, I hadn't really taken into consideration the way that payroll works and how it impacts workers, in particular, employees that live paycheck to paycheck. So yeah. It was that year, in the summer months, my daughter Eliza left home to go to college, and she was living off campus, not too far away. It was about, you know, a half hour away from where we live. She had a job and was earning enough to pay her bills, but she kept coming to me month after month for these short-term loans. Her bills came due and she didn't get paid for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 days into the future, and just needed a short-term loan. And it happened enough where I began thinking more and more about her experience and how unfair it is, in particular for workers that, again, are living paycheck to paycheck, how, you know, they've worked and have earned their pay, but they just don't receive that pay until weeks into the future. And I just thought that it was unfair and began spending a lot of time thinking about that problem. And why does it work that way? Why was payroll? Why did that norm set in, and, you know, semi-monthly, bi-weekly sort of cadence? And why was that? Could you accelerate pay and get workers paid much faster? And just became very passionate about that and decided to tackle that problem. And we launched Every.
So tell us more about, you know, kind of, is there an ideal Every customer that you work with? You know, customization, tell us more about the product. But, you know, before you do that, how'd you ultimately come to the name Every?
Sure. So I actually have this journal where, you know, as I was thinking about this problem, I was just jotting down phrases that kept recurring in my mind. And the phrase that kept repeating was the exchange of value, meaning workers provide their value to a business in the form of their work, and businesses reciprocally provide their value in the form of pay. And it's that exchange that I was really focused on. And it seemed to be just archaic that exchange of that value took so long to be realized by the employee. And so EV became the exchange of value in between the employer and the employee. In the finance world, they sort of short form those two phrases, employer and employee, using the last two letters. So employer, ER. And for employee, EE. So I just combined those on this journal that I have. The exchange of value became EV. ER is the employer and EE is the employee. So the exchange of value between the employer and the employee, and accelerating that, became our focus. And then also Every, you know, you get paid every day. And so there's some different spins on how you can use that word. And then I think one other thing too that I struggled with as a founder, and maybe some of your listeners do this too. I mean, eventually you have to buy a domain name, and sometimes that can be really expensive. Every was one that I was able to acquire for about $5,000. So not overly expensive, but, you know, I've been in businesses where we've spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on a domain name, and, you know, getting this business launched, I didn't think that was a good use of capital. And so, you know, all those things combined in that time period that I was thinking about it, Every just resonated and became a story that encompassed what we were targeting, and that became the name.
Yeah, it's way too
way too many stories where basically the domain is what really drives what a company name ultimately is, especially because if you go into like .io or .whatever and it's not .com, it's just, you know, it makes it a little bit less recognizable and easy to find. So it's funny how much the domain dominates, you know, kind of how people think of company names.
Sure.
So, you know, tell us why you mentioned it when going through, you know, the origin story of Every, but I mean, why has the norm set in of every 2 week for a lot of jobs or every week? I mean, does it go back to paper checks were cut and it's just, it was less expensive back then. It just kind of became the norm, because as we've gotten better technology, it would seem that that would compress a bit, but it really hasn't overall.
You know, another great question. When you think back, like if you study payroll, the history of payroll, and go back way back in time, people were accustomed to getting compensated for their work daily. It was more rudimentary back then. I mean, one of the interesting bits of history is when you go back far enough, they used to get paid in beer rations. So they would do their work, and I guess it was a big party after the fact. The employer would give them beer rations and they'd all party. But it was very, you know, that exchange of that value was much more real time. And then fast forward to, you know, more after the industrial age, it started to elongate. And especially in the early 1900s, I think 1940s was when employer taxes started to take into effect. And so employers would have to start calculating the taxes, which made it more complicated. And then when you look at our banking infrastructure, sort of the plumbing of moving money from point A to point B, it set in and it was just slow, expensive and slow. And so fast forward to, you know, 5 years ago, there was some innovation that came in right when we were starting Every, which became sort of the enabler. It was in March of 2018, same day ACH was launched, the third phase of it, launched into the banking world, which allowed you to move money from point A to point B on the same day within hours. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, it was either, you know, next day or standard ACH, which takes, you know, the next day or 2 to 3 days into the future, just very slow and archaic. So making that more of a real-time experience just wasn't possible. So as soon as I saw that, I mean, it was the very next month I incorporated Every and launched it, and that became the beginning of our journey. And, you know, over the past 5 years, there's been a lot of innovation in the payments infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And there's actually even more real-time payments that are coming out. FedNow is something that maybe you've heard about, or some of your listeners have heard about, which is going to be launched in July, which is more of an instant type of experience, instant payment experience, moving even faster than same-day ACH, which was, you know, relatively recent. But we're seeing this transition to being able to move money along faster. And then I would say just this might be informative for your users to thinking about the payroll cycle and why we ended up there. You know, there's a bit of the software experience which has made that difficult, more challenging for employers to pay their workers faster. And you have like the larger payroll companies, you know, their software's been around for decades, and so they have this, you know, behemoth software, and to move that ship to something that's more nimble, fast, it's going to be a big challenge. And there's a dirty little secret in the payroll world, which not many people know about, but if you go to their public filings and look at their income statement, you'll see this line in their revenue section that's interest income. And so they're incentivized to move slow. Over time, what's happened is they'll pull money from businesses when they hit approve to process payroll, and they'll sit on it for days before they release it, you know, the payment to employees. And they're during that time period, they're earning interest off of moving slow. So the incentives are misaligned, I think, when you look at the big payroll companies. We just decided right from the start that we're going to get employees their pay as fast as possible, and we're incentivized in the right way to do that.
I mean, how far do you think we are away from, you know, kind of the, if not daily, at least the, maybe the payday isn't daily, but the employee saying, hey, I need that money today is, you know, kind of the norm. It feels like we're starting, and like, you know, even like organizations like Uber and others kind of give their employees access to their wages. But, you know, like, for instance, our business is the 2-week cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, we've obviously started to look at options because we're in fintech, and we obviously know, you know, learned from companies like you and others. But ultimately, how far away do you think we are? Is it, you know, the next decade that you'll start to see this as more of a norm further? Because you mentioned the alignment of some of the organizations that make money on the interest. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, that was the big question that I had when I started every back in 2018. I didn't know how long it was going to take for that transition to happen. Over the past 5 years, we've seen some really rapid adoption. Earned wage access has more or less exploded and driving a lot of attention to the need to get employees their pay faster. The gig marketplace has also exploded. So there's, you know, roughly 70 million gig workers out there. And that's exactly the reason why they're working gig work, is because they need that, you know, they need their money from that effort much more real time. And so it's just driving, there's this tailwind that's really pushing that innovation along. I think we're still in that early phase of that innovation cycle. When you look at an innovation cycle, there's the early adopters. I think we're still there, but eventually, you know, within the next decade, we're going to see that move more into the mainstream. And I think what I just mentioned are going to be the drivers that push us there. And it just makes sense. You know, when you think about technology, broadly speaking, you know, what entrepreneurs and technology does, it just removes friction from the process. And there's a lot of friction mm-hmm. that's in payroll. And when you think about, I can give you many examples, but for example, in my lifetime, I've seen watching a movie at home go from having to drive to, I mean, initially it was going to the grocery store and having to rent the VHS player along with the movie. I don't know if you...
No, I'm not that old
enough to remember that, but you know, I'm approaching, next year I'll be 50. So that's kind of gives you a sense for my perspective, but I remember that.
It's only about a 10 year gap.
Okay. You go to that type of experience to Blockbuster to, you know, Netflix, the order by mail, then you go to Redbox, and then Netflix, kind of the early streaming. And now there are many streaming options. You just basically turn your computer, your TV on, and order a movie, and there you go. And I think payroll is the same way. The software experience right now, and some of the bigger players don't allow for that. They're not enabled, but it's going to go there. It's going to go to real-time pay. And I think we're on that path over the next decade. We're going to see some real significant strides there.
One thing I've wondered about this space is, you know, you mentioned the example with your daughter, which is, you know, you have to wait 4 or 5 days. You have these bills that are due. Obviously, the due dates of the bills aren't going to wait 4 or 5 days. You'll get late charges, and then you'll lose even more money. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how much would access to your pay almost immediately, or at least at the end of every day, would increase financial wellness and just how people think or feel about their financial situation if they were able to pull what they earned that day or the last couple of days? Would it help financial wellness? Has there been any data to show already that it's helping? What are your thoughts on kind of the wellness factor of, you know, that person that you mentioned living paycheck to paycheck?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of qualitative evidence that it's extremely helpful, in particular for a good subset of the worker population. You know, the ones sort of like my daughter is in living paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, that's almost three out of four U.S. workers are living paycheck to paycheck. And it's, when you look at the data, these are people that also earn, you know, over $100,000. There's a significant portion of those that you wouldn't necessarily think are in that type of situation, but they are. And when you're living paycheck to paycheck and you have an emergency, it just puts you in a real difficult bind. So it definitely is impactful for those type of workers. And the giving employees their access to their pay quicker will help avoid situations where they might have to go to a payday lender or, you know, rack up balance on a credit card that becomes difficult to pay down over time. It just removes the fees and the unnecessary type of expense that they wouldn't otherwise have to incur if you just paid them more real time.
You know, we just went through at least a mini banking crisis of sorts, you know, where money's locked up and, you know, people or payroll was pushed and never went through. I mean, how does in a crisis like that, when you're thinking of the various options as a company, as a business owner, all of a sudden you start to get a better sense of maybe how some of these systems and how some of the plumbing and how these things work, how much can something like that open people's eyes to, you know, what are the other solutions that might help my business either save money or spread risk or, you know, give me options that I'm not stuck waiting either days for a wire or 3 to 5 days for ACH. I mean, I would presume a company like yours would see that as like an opportunity of, hey, we can get to more people. We can give them a better understanding of how maybe some of the systems work and how much efficiency might be built if they were to go to us or, you know, similar type providers.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things there to point out. So most payroll companies predominantly use the ACH network rails to move money from point A to point B. So they're confined to business hours, you know, so Monday through Friday, excluding holidays, they can move money. And oftentimes they're moving money in the slowest form, either next day. And what you mostly see is they're using standard ACH. So it takes several days for it to get there. We've built our whole infrastructure on same day ACH. So when an administrator in our software clicks approve, their employees are getting their pay within hours. We also have the ability to use, and we've built this into our product. There's three methods of getting employees their pay. One is the same day pay experience. And then there's also instant pay, which leverages the card network rails.
Yeah.
So it's a different path to get to the same destination. And that happens, it goes from point A to point B within seconds, seconds or minutes. And that also has enabled our customers to the ability to pay their workers outside of those Monday through Friday business hours. So after hours, on weekends, on holidays, they can get their employees their pay, again, within seconds or minutes. And we're going to be launching that another product this month, which is a pay card. An every pay card, which also gets the money directly to the employee instantly and allows them to use it instantly. So we've built in some capabilities that other payroll companies have not built. And it goes back to really our focus and emphasis on getting workers their pay fast. Whereas, you know, the typical larger payroll company, they're not focused on that. They're not built for the speed of pay, which we are.
I mean, do you think in one way the daily or faster pay becomes a competitive advantage where kind of the push for change is from the bottom up and the employees are going to their employers saying, hey, my friend or my cousin, my brother works for a company and, you know, they get paid at the end of the day if they want to, or they do get paid at the end of every day or every couple of days, and that some of these big payroll providers start like, you know, seeing these conversations shift and all of a sudden the need for it expands. Because right now I presume a lot of companies you work with, this is one of those competitive advantages that they have.
It is in some of the verticals that we sell into, which are, you know, our ideal customer profile. When we look at the markets that we sell into, gig marketplaces, for example, that's an expectation.
Yeah.
When they finish a gig or a delivery or finish their work, they get that pay instantly. And that's table stakes. It's no longer a nice to have. It's expected. And when you think about, you know, roughly 70 million gig workers that are out there, they're, some of them are doing that full time. And there's many that are in that work environment that are doing it just as a side hustle in addition to their full-time job. And so they have this experience where in the, you know, when they're doing their gig work, they get paid immediately. And then when they go to their regular day job, it's just really slow. And so those are going to merge. And there is going to be a push by those workers to eventually get it into more of the mainstream and in the payroll experience, like it just is an expectation. And so when you think about what you mentioned earlier, which is the banking, you know, Silicon Valley Bank and some of the banking disruptions we've seen recently, it's really caused a lot of workers to think about their pay. And, yeah, you know, if they don't get their pay on the day that they expected, it's a problem. And a lot of workers don't realize this, but they're actually creditors to their company when they're in the pay cycle. So they're performing their work and, yeah, you know, they're a creditor, their business owes them money. And most people don't think about it that way. And it's really odd when you think about yourself as an employee and you're a creditor to your business. It should be, you know, your business just pays you when you work. And I think that's going to become more and more of a norm. And another thing too, that a lot of people haven't thought about, which is, you know, going through the pandemic, that also influenced a lot of what we're seeing today. A lot of people used to get paid via paper checks, which to me is completely absurd. You know, we don't do paper checks. It's all electronic payments for us. But, you know, when you're working remote or your business is shut down for the pandemic or something, you know, paying a worker in a paper check is just not feasible anymore. And so yeah, it's just really fueled a lot of the expectations around pay for workers, that they want to get it transmitted to them digitally and fast. And we're seeing that definitely.
So as a first-time founder, what's one of the lessons that you've learned over the years about you or about the company, given the you know, the founding role that you're in now versus the previous CFO role?
Boy, lessons learned. It's one thing, and just to point out, is it's really hard starting a business. It is really challenging for sure. And in my experience being a CFO, I, you know, when I look back on my career prior to founding Every, I was a CFO in businesses, and sequentially, you know, as we went through time, I was moving more and more into smaller and smaller businesses. And so it became less of a challenge, or some of the fear, I suppose, started to dissipate as I, you know, had experience in smaller and smaller companies. So that might be something that some of your listeners can about or learn from, but it was still hard. And so when I think about some of the lessons I've learned, it's really challenging. And what I've done is when I founded Every, I brought in some really experienced people that I had worked with and knew and enjoyed working around. And that has sort of helped spread out those challenges, having really competent and experienced and smart, capable people around me as, you know, as a founding team. That's really helped lessen those hard moments. I mean, when you're an entrepreneur, there's going to be ups and downs. Those swings are quite wild. In those really low moments, if you have a good founding team, they help you manage through that. And then one other thing too, I've experienced as we've built Every, is we've really been focused on solving the problem. You know, it's less so about the compensation side of it. It's less so about that. And it's less so about ego. It's more really focused on the problem. And I think as an entrepreneur, if you really have a problem that you're passionate about, and that's where your focus is, not on making, you know, a huge amount of money or, you know, driving attention to yourself or getting this big ego boost. If you're focused on the problem, I think it just helps manage through the ebbs and flows of being an entrepreneur.
What about one regret? You have one regret that you can share, at least, that maybe you say, hey, I wish I would have done that better, or I wish we would have made that deal.
I don't have any regrets, truthfully, when I think about back about the experience. One thing that I did learn, and this is early on, I don't know if you're familiar with the book, The Lean Startup, and that process of iterating, so getting, you know, your product out there and then iterating off of it. That was one thing that we did. And I would say there's in businesses that I've been in the past, they've tended to, and I've seen this with other companies, take too long to get your product out there and get the feedback from customers. And it's an iterative process. So I would just say that that's
trying to be too perfect.
I've regretted in the every experience, but I've seen it in other businesses that I've been in, and also just observing it from other companies, that, you know, it's just an iterative process. And so it's okay to get your product out there and get that customer feedback. And it's not going to be, 100% right from the start. And that's just normal.
Tell us a little bit more, how big is the team today? What's the makeup of team, engineers, product? Tell us a little bit more about those around you.
So we have about 60 employees, and we're based here in Salt Lake City, Utah. I would say there's about 20% of our employee base that's outside of Utah.
Okay.
We have an office in downtown Salt Lake, but for the most part, we're remote. Like, we go in there once a week for our executive meetings and for department meetings. And just if an employee wants to go, you know, get out of the house and go to an office, they can. But for the most part, we're remote, and it's worked really well for us. Yeah, and as far as where we are in our growth, we're still early, but I would say we have a little over 700 customers and, you know, a couple hundred thousand of workers on our platform. So we have, you know, individual businesses that use our product for HR and payroll. So you can easily onboard and manage and pay your workers fast on our platform. So think of it replacing like an ADP or a Paychex.
Yeah.
And then we have businesses that are these large platform businesses. Think of like delivery, where they just have thousands and thousands of contractors that are doing deliveries and want to get paid fast. And we've recently launched a white label product. So businesses that are like vertically focused and want to tackle payroll, but don't want to build it themselves, they can just use our product in a white label way and build off of that. And I can just tell you, Todd, it's really hard to build payroll. There's a lot to it. So people can take advantage of all the lessons we've learned as we've built it and just implement it really fast.
I saw that you guys had raised, some investor capital. How was, the raising capital process? I mean, I'm assuming as a CFO, you've been through some of that before. Yeah. What'd you learn about yourself as a founder this time, maybe that you didn't in previous iterations of raising capital from investors?
Most of those learnings happened in prior companies that I was in as the CFO. Yeah, I became very familiar with the process and just knew that you have to be out there and speak to a lot of VCs. And rejection is just part of the experience. you speak to 10 VCs, you're going to get 9 no's, you know, and maybe one that will take a second meeting and will let the process progress. And so you get a lot of rejection, and you have to expect that you're going to be talking to a lot of investors, and that's just part of it. So as an entrepreneur, just expect that you're going to hear no more than anything else, and just don't take it personally. It's just part of the process, and it's normal. And so those lessons were already learned, when we launched Every. One of the benefits, though, of being a former CFO is I had interacted with enough investors that the setting up the meetings were a little easier. And actually, one of the investors that co-led our Series A round was an investor in a prior company that I'd been in. And so I already was familiar with me and some of our founding team. And so that made it a lot easier too.
You never know when that Rolodex comes in handy. So,
sure.
So we have just a couple minutes left. I like to end a little bit lighter. Do you have a favorite book or the last book that you read?
You know, I don't get much time to read, truthfully, meaning books. So, you know, the last book I read was probably that one that I referred to earlier, which is The Lean Startup. That's a good one that I would recommend. More so these days, I'm on Twitter. And so I follow, you know, probably a dozen VCs or SaaS experts. And there's a bunch of them out there that provide a lot of good insight. And so I would say that's more or less what I consume these days.
Yeah, every founder, needs to, kind of be fresh and present for their team. What do you do to unwind and kind of make sure you're fresh and not burned out for those around you, and kind of making sure you're in that zone, with your fellow founders and your team?
Yeah, great question. So I'm big into music, always have been. So my wife and I, we go to a lot of music festivals and concerts. That's one way that I unwind. I also collect vinyl, so collecting records and just listening to music is something that I enjoy. And then separate to that, I was a big cyclist and also got into CrossFit. I'm getting a little bit older, as I mentioned earlier, I'm approaching 50. So recently it's transitioned more to trail running. And so being here in Utah, we have just really easy access to the mountains and to get on the trails. And so I do that quite a bit. My wife and I are just, we're going to be hiking Mount Tipinogos out here, which is a pretty big hike. So that's something we're gearing up for. I enjoy.
Do you have a favorite sport or sport team that you root for?
The Red Sox. Yeah, that would be the sport team that I probably am the closest with. And you being in New York is probably not what you want to hear.
I'm a Mets fan, so that doesn't really bother me. Okay,
yeah, I would say I followed the Red Sox since I lived out in Boston and New England. I actually lived in New Hampshire, but did some schooling in Boston. And so became really a fan of the Red Sox. But, recently, within the last week, we've heard that Salt Lake might be getting a Major League Baseball team. So we'll see. Wow. We'll have to see about that. So if we get a team out this way, I might have to convert over to that team.
Do you have a favorite vacation spot?
Favorite vacation spot? You know, my wife and I, she's a school counselor. And so she has her summers off. This last summer, we spent 2 months in Europe. So half of that was in France and the other half was in Italy. Favorite vacation spot, I would say right now is Paris. I wouldn't want to be there now because there's some, there's some upheaval at the moment. While we were there, and this is how we like to do vacationing. We like to be there longer and get a little bit more familiar with the culture. And so we were, a good month in France. And I would say Paris has a particular warm spot in my heart. A particular spot in Paris is my favorite, which is the Luxembourg Gardens. So what I was doing there is I was working. I was working the whole time remotely, and my wife was more on vacation. So we would go out in the mornings with the time difference and go to a museum or see a site. And then she would stay out shopping and doing her own thing. And I would go back and work. And what I ended up doing was, instead of staying in the apartment that we were renting, I would go to Luxembourg Gardens, which was not too far away from where we were staying. And I just had this mobile Wi-Fi spot, and I would just work there in the gardens, and it was absolutely beautiful. So that's one of my favorite spots, I would say.
Not bad to spend some time working there. Final question, biggest inspiration, kind of what inspires you?
I just love to be involved in, we spend a third of our life working. And so I want to have that time spent to in building something that I can refer back to later in my life, that I can say I was part of building that or helping something progress and innovate. And so I would say looking at other innovators really inspires me, and I want to be part of you know, making people's lives better, you know, might be a little trite, but I do like what Elon Musk has done. He tackles some really big problems. He has a big vision, and I like how he executes. And one aspect of how he goes about his work that I really enjoy is he doesn't take himself too seriously either, which
yeah,
I think people tend to be a little too serious. So
oh, yeah.
You can still be smart and execute well and innovate while at the same time of having a good time and having fun with it too.
Well, Ron, I appreciate you giving me some time today. Continued success to you and the team, and hopefully we'll get you back sometime in the future.
Thanks, Todd.
Thank you.